Mason Onati reached base three times, going 1-for-3 with two walks, an RBI, and two runs scored. Also picked up a stolen base, maybe one of the better performances from the Rafters. On the pitching side, though, it was a great pitching performance from Espen Simpson, going three scoreless innings with two strikeouts. Noah Marschke also had a strong start. He went four innings, allowing just the two runs on four hits and four walks with five strikeouts. That's a season high for the Rafters so far. But Jack Obrasky and Ashton Poole both struggled. They combined to allow seven runs over two innings with six walks and four hits, only striking out one batter. So hoping that they will take that next step forward. And, well, impressed by Espen Simpson and Noah Marschke, hoping that they can keep things rolling along. So once again, the final score was 9-7. The Rafters up next. They're going to be replaying the Royal Oak Leprechauns here at home for the fourth game of the five-game homestand and hoping for a better result. They did this same thing against Fond du Lac a couple days ago. It was a 9-1 game entering the seventh inning. They start the comeback, but they strand runners on first and third in the ninth inning, down just two runs. They almost made the comeback yet again here, and it's been a similar thing. But the last time that they lost after a valiant comeback like this, it was a big win the next day. They were able to come up with an 11-4 win last night, so hoping to kind of keep the same thing rolling along here as we get back to work tomorrow, Friday at 6:35. The two pitchers that are currently scheduled to go, it's Kenny Schultz for the Rafters. That's an exciting story to get to watch. He was an intern, still is an intern, and he was turned to a pitcher as well as he was signed by the Rafters, and he dominated his first time up, 1.93 ERA over 4 2/3 innings, hoping to have similar action his next time out, but we'll see if he can do it. That's tomorrow. He's going up against Gabe Jones for the Leprechauns, and well, that will be tomorrow at 6:35. We'll have the pregame show here on WFHR at 6:20 p.m. as always. And we'll have a pregame interview as well. And always love to get to talk to the guys. And, well, hope that you did enjoy the broadcast tonight. It was a good game out here, but the Rafters ultimately fall short. They drop to 4-7 on the season, while Royal Oak improves to 6-4. So that's going to do it from our broadcast and our postgame show. A huge thank you to all of you for your continued support, and also a thank you to the entire Rafters organization for always giving the opportunity to call these games and, of course, to also have such great games out here and welcome in the fan atmosphere. So that's going to do it. One last time, the final score, 9-7. Royal Oak beats the Wisconsin Rapids Rafters here at home. For myself, Austin Thomas, and from the entire rest of the Wisconsin Rapids Rafters organization, thank you, and have a great rest of your night.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. President Trump and Elon Musk's public feud kicks up a notch. CBS's Linda Ken, President Trump and Elon Musk.
Aaron Rodgers to join the Steelers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports NFL. Aaron Rodgers has decided to join the Pittsburgh Steelers. ESPN reporting Rodgers will report on social media. The Steelers hold their mandatory veteran minicamp next week. Rodgers says he's been in contact with coach Mike Tomlin, offensive coordinator Arthur Smith.
The quarterback coach is actually a guy named Tom Morris. Tom Morris is the quarterback who was in the upstate in 2006.
The White House says White is an unfortunate episode.
The first offseason I ever did was the Mike McCarthy quarterback school. It was me and Tom Morris and Tom Clemens.
In golf, the AmFam Championship underway at TPC Golf Course in just north of Madison, raising millions for charity.
That's the end game, right? I mean, that's why we're all doing this, to get back to not only the Children's Hospital here in town, but to all the other charities that we can impact and give money to. And, all about, you know, it's just a great opportunity for us to be able to support those people and to give back.
At least a little
Wisconsin
bit
golfer
when
Steve
it comes
Strickler,
to trade talks with China, which are at the core of President Trump's, quote, reciprocal tariffs.
Outside of a detention hearing, supporters of an 18-year-old high school student in Massachusetts.
I'm meteorologist Roddy Marcello Price in the overnight, mostly cloudy skies, light winds, and more snows will dip into the mid and upper 50s. On Friday, partly sunny skies, and there will be some showers, even some rumbles of thunder. High temperatures will warm.
Reverse discrimination laws in Ohio and 20 other states are unconstitutional, according to the U.S.
Tad Kreitlow. On Friday, Dr. Kristen Lierley joins us, plus our regular week in review panelists, former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel, and journalist Jennifer Schulze and Mark Jacob.
Mornings with Pat Breitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
Walk into federal court and you're alleging employment discrimination, you're not going to have a different standard based on either the color of your skin or whether or not you are part of the LGBTQ community.
The case for straight government worker Marlene Ames, who sued Ohio for being passed over for promotions, can now proceed. From toxic workplaces to a toxic fungus, a woman arrested by the FBI in what feds consider to be a potential agro-terrorism weapons case appears in a Michigan courtroom. CBS's Scott McFarland.
Youngkin John's going to remain jailed till at least next Friday, her next court hearing in this very unorthodox case. She's accused, along with her boyfriend, a Chinese researcher, of a conspiracy to smuggle a potentially dangerous fungus last July through Detroit's Metropolitan Airport. John was a researcher at the University of Michigan who specialized in microorganisms.
This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Good morning and welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and Calvin Butenoff coming to you live from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. You can leave a comment as well if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. All kinds of things coming up on the show today. Our friend and colleague and host of Amicus, a law review on Saturdays from 9 to 11 across the network, Jim Santel, is going to be joining us. Donald Trump not happy with the Federalist Society. Who have helped him pick all the judges he's been appointing.
What world do we live in when a Republican's like, I don't like the Federalist Society right now?
I know. So among many other things, we will talk about that with Jim Santel coming up after the 9:30 news. In hour number two, 10:35, the Acme Packing Company sports guru Paul Noonan will be here to talk all things sports. Brewers with another big win yesterday.
Another win.
9-1.
Yeah, 6-1, I believe. And this is 9 victories out of the last 10 games.
Like to see that.
Mm-hmm.
Like to see that. We will wrap up the show as we always do with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Today, it is the supermarket sweep edition. Stick around for that. And as always, if you have a thing you think should not be, send it in to Greg and me at janesays@civicmedia.us. JaneSays, Jane Says, at civicmedia.us. And don't forget to make sure you have the Civic Media app, because our statewide Text to Win Scotty summer contest is underway through next Friday.
Yes.
So you have 4 chances every day for the next 2 weeks in the 7, 11, 2, and 4 p.m. hours to listen for the keyword. And once you get that, you text it in via the Civic Media app, and you're in the running for either $100 in cash or a pair of Milwaukee Brewers club level tickets. And then you're in the running for the grand prizes as well, either a vacation getaway in Baraboo or Wisconsin Dells.
That's a tough choice.
I know.
That's a tough choice.
I know.
I would love those club level tickets too, because you know that
they're good seats.
They're great seats. They're so really comfy. They're so squishy.
Winners have included Mark from Hayward, listening on WHSM, and Paul in Green Bay, streaming on WGBW. Congratulations, guys. Thank you so much for listening. You could be among the many, many winners. Your next chance to text in that keyword coming up after 11 o'clock in the Tom Hartman Show.
You're going to actually listen for us, me or Jane, giving you that keyword. So when you hear us giving you that keyword, that's your
clue.
Key word to text us.
Download the Civic Media app. It is completely and absolutely free. No budget here in Wisconsin. Whatever. State budget. This from WPR. Sean Johnson with the byline. State budget talks called off as Governor Tony Evers and Republican lawmakers hit an impasse. This means Republicans who run the legislature will write their next budget themselves, which they want to do anyway.
Yeah, I mean, they made it very clear when Governor Evers presented his biennium budget to them, to the people, and they said, you know what this really needs? A lot of empty spaces. Let's go ahead and clear out anywhere
everything
between 1 to 612, and that's the specific number, that they cleared out of the budget because they thought that those just, they don't want to fund those things.
No.
No. A lot of those being social programs, things that help people.
Things that they heard about when they took the Joint Finance Committee around Wisconsin and had four meetings around the state, where the vast majority of people said what they were concerned about was funding education, taking care of health care.
And child care.
And child care.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, we're not going to do it now.
We don't want policy to be mixed up with finances, what they said to defend the reason why they cut those things out. That's a really, really cowardly and stupid thing to say. We don't want to pull, we don't want to combine finance with policy. How do you think
it's all policy?
What's that word? Financed. Oh, there it is.
Yeah, that's pretty remarkable.
It just goes back to the whole thing we've been talking about for, it feels like years. It's probably decades, and it feels like decades. They cannot give Tony Evers a win.
For anything.
For anything. And there are things that are that have come through that state house besides the budget that have been seen as bipartisan that the Popcorn King won't bring to a vote, won't allow to happen, has spoken horribly about. I mean, we just played a couple days ago a video of him speaking to Luann Bird where he says Obamacare is free. This is the guy in charge of the assembly right now, and they just will not give anyone an inch. No wins for anyone, and that includes me and you.
Well, they want wins.
Yeah.
It's just not for folks, run-of-the-mill folks.
No.
If you're not a donor, you know, do you really need anything?
Yeah, if you're not.
Do I really have to give you anything if you don't give me any money?
Billionaires, millionaires, landlords, you name it, business owners, they get the wins. They get the cuts. They get the tax cuts. They get the.
It's interesting that you mentioned landlords because I was listening on the way in to Pat Kreitlow, Mornings with Pat Kreitlow from 6
that?
To 9.
There it is.
6 to 9 a.m. And he mentioned as well that Wisconsin's legislature has a very high number of lawmakers who are landlords.
Yep. Both sides, too, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Both sides. Yeah. Absolutely. Not just one side. Yeah. But it does make you wonder if we should be allowing those people, therefore, to write legislation affecting things that they own. But I guess that's just the way it works. Anyway, yeah, we have no budget, even though top Republican leaders who have often criticized, they jump on Governor Evers all the time for not engaging with them. He's not nice enough to them. But all of them have called their budget talks up to this point good faith. It was all good faith.
Yeah.
Until it wasn't.
Also, I'm just going to put it out here. I've met Tony Evers. I know people who know Tony Evers. Tony Evers is a delightful human being. And just because he's not easy to, quote unquote, talk to doesn't mean he's... I don't buy that. And if anything, if he's not easy to talk to, maybe he's frustrated because all the items that he put in there, you want to strip out. So maybe you're not the top of his list right now. Or
placating.
Maybe he's not sitting there going to give you 20 minutes of back and forth chummy banter. He wants to get to work. But this is about the health and wealth of Wisconsinites, specifically the children. And they want to rip out everything that helps kids, helps family, helps and helps businesses, by the way, because these are investments, not worthless, mindless, fraudulent
safety
spending.
Nets.
This is about investing in the state, investing in the people, and investing in the future, which have ROI and have been studied over and over that when states invest in their people, the economy grows, morale grows, health gets better, and just productivity rises. So I guess what did you say, Jane? The budget now just has the words the and we'll finance the paperclips.
Yeah, and we'll see what they're going to fill in between all the ands and the thes.
Yeah.
I guess what jumps out at me from this article again from WPR is the governor's office said the governor was ready to accept the GOP proposed tax cuts, including an income tax cut targeting middle class and working families, and the elimination of income taxes for certain retirees, but Republicans couldn't agree on the governor's priorities, which included money for child care, K-12 schools, and the University of Wisconsin system.
Yeah. And some of those tax cuts, by the way, well, like, you know, I mean, they're heavily defended by right-leaning think tanks, but economically, they don't make sense. When you're cutting taxes for retired folks, like, it doesn't have the economic impact they want. It looks good on a headline. It looks good on paper.
And it sounds good to seniors.
But there are other ways of allowing seniors to keep their money. But this is, to me, hey, seniors, come here once. How would you like to not pay taxes after you retire? I would be immediately hesitant on that one. Like, what kind of economic impact does that have on the rest of the state then? What tax revenue is the state? In a state that's already anemic in their spending of their money, what's going to happen to the money that I save? Or let me rephrase that. If I'm not paying my taxes in for my retirement,
right,
how are things going to then be funded?
Tax cuts for the rich.
Well, then
that fixes everything, Greg.
You're right, Jane.
Everything. You know,
I'm going to go. You're right. We're done. I think we've done everything
it's
we can
do. Easy yeah. fix. Robin Voss, Assembly Speaker, and Representative Mark Bourne of Beaver Dam, the co-chair of the legislature's budget committee, thanked Governor Evers and his staff for trying to reach consensus. Quote, Assembly Republicans remain open to discussions with Governor Evers in hopes of finding agreement. However, after meeting until late last night and again this morning, it appears the two sides remain far apart. Yeah, because Governor Evers would like to, I don't know, again, address our child care issues, mm-hmm. our health care issues, our education issues. The only thing that the Republicans, at least from what I can recall, their only platform is cutting taxes for rich people.
Mm-hmm. And demonizing any sort of spending for folks who need it. Programs. I mean, once again, in that video with Robin Voss and Luann Bird, the way he speaks about, like, we have too much welfare. Well, what is that even? What do you mean by welfare? Do you mean, like, you don't like helping poor people? Then why? And she asked that question. Why can't you help? Oh, they don't. We spend too much. Okay. Prove it.
Well. And again, it's now they're coming back to municipalities and saying, you know, like the lead issue.
Yes.
The lead pipes issue. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, you know, yes, we have this $4 billion surplus we're still sitting on. Mm-hmm. But you guys got to figure it out yourselves. Yeah. Wisconsin Senior Senator Ron Johnson said that.
Yeah.
About the lead pipe issue, which is not just a city of Milwaukee problem.
Nope.
This is a statewide problem, and Ron Johnson has said, yeah, well, send it back to the state. You guys better figure it out.
Yeah.
Pull yourselves up by your lead bootstraps.
And yeah, if the government, if the Health and Human Services Department is going to cut lead abatement programs for the state, not the city, but the state, and it's being left to our state house in Madison, well, those kids and those families are going to have lead because the state is not going to do anything.
No.
They won't spend a dime, and maybe their church can help them. Maybe they can snap their finger and magically away. It's sad because watching our elected officials who are in power openly, actively, and unabashedly not care about its people is embarrassing. And I know for a fact at least three people at the top of my brain who said they will never either move here or move back to this state because of the way they treat the citizens and the way specifically they treat women with regard to the 1849 abortion ban. But that's another conversation. But just our reputation now is terrible in this state because it's backwards.
Although we did put up the big cheddar wall. We were successful in stopping Elon.
Oh, yes. Well, and that's the thing is that, folks, is what we're talking about. And that's how you can do something. You can go to myvote.wi.gov because we know you have a voice. You've shown it to us.
Yes.
We've seen it in action before.
It works.
Call your reps and tell them we want a budget and we want a fair budget and we want a budget that works together.
And like childcare.
Yes.
Let's work on childcare and do something about that. We're going to continue this conversation. We have a someone on the live stream with a comment, actually, on the text line. We will come back with that. We'd love to hear from you, 855-752-4842. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids Home for Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Good morning. Welcome to Matt Mayer on Air. Jane Matt Mayer, Greg Bach, the Board Lord, coming to you from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. You can also leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter, talking about the lack of a budget in Wisconsin after talks called off between Governor Evers and Republican lawmakers because they can't get anywhere. So the Republicans are going to write up their own budget.
Yeah, totally.
It's just perfectly
fine. I'm sure it'll be great.
Yes, I'm sure we'll all agree with everything in it. Before we went to the break, we did have Phil from Mount Pleasant texting in. Why don't we address Robin Voss's issues by boycotting his popcorn business? He does own a popcorn company in Burlington.
Yeah.
From what I have found. And he is a landlord in Whitewater, I know.
Mm-hmm. He loves to protect landlords. I've been boycotting his popcorn for nearly 48 years because I've never had it once. I'm okay with that.
You're good with that?
Yeah.
Don't feel deprived?
No.
If you would like to join the conversation about this lack of a budget again, because Governor Evers is pushing for more money for education, more money for health, more money for child care. Republicans, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
855-752-4842. Cassandra from New London is on the line. Good morning, Cassandra. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
So this budget thing, as I've mentioned before, just irritates the heck out of me. However, like, we just had a town hall with my rep, Dave Murphy. I no longer feel bad about calling these people out. But Dave Murphy, Rachel Cabral Guevara is our senator. And there were suggestions given to them if they really didn't want to take out of our surplus to fund public schools and special education and childcare. And, you know, while there are some of these, you know, more affluent school districts, like, why don't we freeze, you know, their funding to, like, add funding to the rural schools? Oh, well, no, we can't do that. How are we going to explain that to all the rich people? Okay, what about, why can't we tax, like, the people that are making more than $1 million in the state? And Dave Murphy's response is, well, then all the rich people are going to leave the state. And it's like, okay, do you have any proof of that?
Right.
No, they can't give any proof of any of that stuff. Yeah. They can't.
And that's the thing is we couldn't. What about all the regular people who might want to leave the state and go to Minnesota or Iowa or Michigan or any or Illinois, where there's lots happening in all of those states? Cassandra, if I'm not mistaken, you're the one who told us that you went to one of the four joint finance committee meetings and waited. You said, I believe you said 9 hours at the end of the, at the, when you finally reached there, you said, like, well, everything has been said and you're going to do nothing.
Yeah, that was me. Yeah. I just basically told them, I said, listen, like, you guys know what we want. And it's shameful that we can't even pay for special education for our public schools, but you're willing to bend over backwards to take care of all of the private schools and pay for vouchers.
And Cassandra, when you said that to them, I'm just curious if, you know, did anybody even flinch? Did that make any of them look the least bit embarrassed?
Not particularly. There were, you know, a couple of the just gentlemen that were up there, and they just, you know, I got like one little smirk from who I think is the chairman, whose name I don't recall, but just basically smirks and just like, oh, well, thanks. Thank you.
Appreciate your time. Thank you for waiting for 9 hours.
Adorable little opinions you all have. Thanks for coming out.
Appreciate it, Cassandra. Thank you so much for checking in. And thank you for going to those things and doing that stuff. I can only imagine your frustration, but I think if we don't turn out for that stuff, that makes it even worse.
Yeah, and just so you, just so everyone knows, in case you want to call them, because they, you know, they might not represent you, but they are the co-chairs of the Joint Finance Committee. That is Senator Howard Markline of Spring Green and Representative Mark Bourne of Beaver Dam.
Ah.
Both of them, whether they, but one or both, gave you that. I get that. They love to say we heard from the people, but they don't listen to the people.
No, they don't
at all,
and that's why. When we had Todd Alba on a couple of weeks ago, I think they should be required to put their phones in a bag before they start listening to constituents, so we know that they're actually listening to people who waited, like Cassandra, for 9 hours.
Can I just say something that I've always wanted to see, whether it's a situation like this or someone testifying in front of a joint committee or something like that? When you see those lawmakers who are looking at their phone or looking away or talking to someone, I just want to see someone go, hey, right here, I'm talking right now. You asked me to be here.
My eyes are up here.
My ears are up here, buddy. I'm sure whatever Twitter has right now is real enthralling, but listen to me. Like, I just want to see that happen because, you know what? It's really disrespectful.
It is disrespectful.
It's disrespectful.
And they should be, I'm sorry, but they should be embarrassed. Mm-hmm. But again, I think shame and embarrassment is something that is disappearing now from our society.
Well, they get to weaponize that situation and say, look what this person did, and I'm an American, and I'm here for you.
And therefore it's justified?
Oh, absolutely. And they'll have at least a small cadre of people saying, yeah, what a jerk. How dare you speak to a congressman or a senator or something? Like, how dare you do that? Because they're being disrespectful. And I thought we were about respect here. I don't know. I'm an old man rant now, and I apologize.
And stay
Jane.
Off his lawn, by
get
the
off
way.
My lawn. I just mowed it. Oh, that reminds me. We're having some work done today. That's right.
Do you have landscapers?
Not landscapers. We have our every quarter or every other month, we have people come by and spray for bugs.
Oh.
We got to make sure the dog doesn't get on it.
Yeah, that's true, too. All right. We have news coming up next. When we return, there was an odd
side
track there. Jim Santel will be here. We're going to talk all things legal. He is the host of Amicus, a law review on Saturdays across the network from 9 to 11. Stay with us. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Have to go away.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
CBS News Brief. Elon Musk claims President Trump couldn't have won the election without him, and Trump is threatening to cancel Musk's government contracts. It stems from Musk's opposition to Trump's budget bill. The president suggests the former special government employee has separation anxiety.
They leave, and they wake up in the morning, and the glamour's gone, the whole world is different, and they become hostile.
Massachusetts high schooler Marcelo Gomes da Silva is free from ICE detention after posting bond. Agents discovered while looking for his father that the 18-year-old was here illegally. His attorney, Robin Nice.
It's a bit of a whirlwind, and I think he takes so much heart knowing that there's so much support and that people mobilized incredibly quickly.
The Supreme Court makes it easier to bring lawsuits over so-called reverse discrimination, siding with an Ohio woman. CBS's Jan Crawford reports.
And so Marlene Ames now can try to prove her case in court that she was discriminated against as a straight woman.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Aaron Rodgers to join the Steelers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports NFL. Aaron Rodgers has decided to join the Pittsburgh Steelers. ESPN reporting Rodgers will report to Pittsburgh when the Steelers hold their mandatory veteran minicamp next week. Rodgers says he's been in contact with head coach Mike Tomlin, offensive coordinator Arthur Smith.
And the quarterback coach is actually a guy named Tom Arth. Tom Arth was in the quarterback room with me in 2006 in Green Bay in the offseason. The first offseason I ever did went through the Mike McCarthy quarterback school. It was me and Tom Arth and Tom Clements.
In golf, the AmFam Championship underway at TPC Golf Course, just north of Madison, raising millions for charity.
That's the end game, right? I mean, that's why we're all doing this, to give back to not only the Children's Hospital here in town, but to all the other charities that we can impact and give money to. And, you know, it's just a great opportunity for us to be able to support those people and to give back.
That's Wisconsin golfer Steve Strickler with Sports on Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Actress Mia Sara is back after a 14-year hiatus. You might know her as Sloane Peterson from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Yahoo Entertainment reports she was back on the red carpet at the premiere of The Life of Chuck, a sci-fi fantasy based on a Stephen King novel. Sara was last seen on the big screen in 2011 in Dorothy and the Witches of Oz. Sara says she is not officially out of retirement, but will always work if director Mike Flanagan asks her. I feel the same way. Here is some cool news on the heels of a really good documentary about Sly and the Family Stone. The Hulu documentary Sly Lives was insightful and a really fun watch. Now, 60 years after a concert recording, a new album will be released. According to Variety, The First Family, live at Winchester Cathedral, 1967, will be released this summer. The band's manager put the recordings in a vault shortly after the show decades ago. They were discovered in 2002. The new old material will be released July 18th on High Moon Records. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. In the overnight, mostly cloudy skies, light winds, and morning lows will dip into the mid and upper 50s. On Friday, partly sunny skies, and there will be some showers, even some rumbles of thunder. High temperatures will warm to the lower 70s, currently 62 degrees.
Maggie Dawn.
At 5 o'clock, I'll be joined by Civic Media's political editor, Dan Schaefer, to discuss what the heck went wrong with Wisconsin's biennial budget and the draconian cuts the MAGA regime is proposing right here at home.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Good morning and welcome. Welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, the board lord, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine, where you can always join us. Call or text at 855-752-4842. You can also leave a comment if you're watching on a live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. He hosts Amicus, a law review on Saturday mornings across the network from 9 to 11. Our friend and colleague Jim Santel is here. Good morning, Jim. How you doing?
Jane, Greg, always good to be with you, especially at the time June, of course, we're anticipating our Supreme Court once again kicking into high gear.
Oh, yeah.
And we can only anticipate what's coming next, can't we?
Well, it seems lately like every once in a while the Supremes will issue a ruling that I agree with. And it's like, well, oh, that seems pretty reasonable. And then 2 weeks later, they come out with something that I think is absolutely abhorrent. And it's like, yeah, that's who you really are. That's kind of right, who those guys are.
Speaking, and it's not just frustration about emotional responses. It's basic legal inconsistency, isn't it? You look at similarly situated circumstances and different results. Is that the rule of law in America today? I guess it is.
Well, and then there's the whole shadow docket, which is a whole nother discussion that we're not going to get into today. But we can talk about that at another time, Jim, because Jim joins us every Thursday at this time. But I wanted to start off a little bit with talking about President Trump is not happy with Leonard Leo and the Federalist Society. My goodness gracious. He had a major meltdown about, he's not happy with Amy Coney Barrett, essentially, is what it comes down to, because she is not his judge. And he appointed all three. He appointed Gorsuch and Kavanaugh and Amy Coney Barrett. And he, I am assuming, just assumed, they're my judges. They're going to do everything that I want. And that's not working out to be the way he thought.
It is not. How disappointing that must be
for
my
president,
right? To discover that, gosh, you put somebody on the Supreme Court and they take an oath to not him, not to people, not to the White House, but let's all say it together, to the American people and the Constitution of the United States. And they begin to look at things, not from a different perspective, but they recognize not only their place in history, but the magnitude of their assignment that has been given to them, which is to do right, to do justice, develop the rule of law, and all those other important things. The independence of justices is not previously unseen in America. We've talked about David Souter before, and we talked John Paul Stevens, all these folks appointed by supposedly conservative presidents, assumed to be conservative, and they drift when they see the real world, if you will, from that vantage point. They drift to the center, if not to the left. And again, we have our president recently melting down, as you said, Jane, because the Federalist Society, not exactly a bastion of liberal viewpoints, has apparently betrayed him somehow and giving him these lists of names of people who will be reliably on his payroll. And he's no longer excited about that.
But
stunning, stunning.
But the thing was, is that the Federalist Society, I mean, they made it very clear when Trump got into the presidency in the first term. They're not about anything other than overturning Roe v. Wade. And I think that the Federalist Society, those names were about Roe v. Wade because they knew they would overturn Roe v. Wade, even though they lied in their confirmation hearings when they said that that was codified law that was already decided, no reason to go back. I don't think the Federalist Society cared about anything else they did after the fact. Because, I mean, they're the Federalists. Those guys are going to be in power. They're going to have their money. They're going to have their influence forever. So for them, it was about Roe v. Wade, period. And they delivered. And at that point, Federalist Society is probably like, eh, we're good. And they don't have to care after that. So, but Trump, yes, you're right. He thinks they belong to him. And they obviously don't read the history books when it comes to Supreme Court justices.
Absolutely. Federalist Society, just a point of personal observation, believe it or not, it was created, this is how old I am, when I was in law school at the University of Chicago, my colleagues, my classmates got together one night and began to put this together way back then at the University of Chicago, the campus there in Hyde
Park. That's where it started.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And even the people who are there to this day trace their roots back to that. At the time, we thought it was, well, it's an interesting perspective. You may not be surprised to learn that I did not join that meeting. But there it began. It has certainly become a major institution in America, regardless of how you feel about their politics. And it has been viewed, Greg, absolutely, as this bastion of conservative thought and on privacy rights and otherwise advancing very generally, as you've indicated, a conservative agenda, and that what they say will be followed by their people and kind of giving direction even to the way the language and the debate proceeds in America. The Federalist Society was always the bastion. When the schism happens between now our president and the Federalist Society, you know that America is drifting in some very interesting directions. The other piece of this wonderful article I suspect you're going to post on your site here about that drift. They also make reference, of course, this comes in part in the wake of the decision by the International Court of Trade, basically saying you can't do all these tariffs, these levies, Mr. President.
It's not in your
purview.
And again,
Donald Trump responds to that and says, you've got to be kidding me, and goes on off of that. Interestingly, there is more reason, it turns out, for Donald Trump, and he's not reading briefs, but we know as well that there was this fiery brief that was written also, an amicus brief to that very court. And it's signed by people like Michael Mukasey, the former attorney general, Steve Calabresi, the head of the Federalist Society, many of the George Allen, John Danforth, Chuck Hagel, all these bastions, these
conservatism.
Icons, right, exactly. And there's sign, and also, I should say, for purposes of being fair about this, Democrats and liberals as well, Harold Coe, the former dean of the Yale Law School, all these people basically say they're not taking a position on policy when it comes to Trump, the levies and the tariffs there. But they basically say the power to tax, regulate commerce, shape the nation's economic course remains with, let's all say it together, Congress.
Yep.
And I love this language. They cannot drift silently into the hands of the president through inertia, inattention, or creative readings of statutes never meant to grant such authority. That conviction is not partisan, they say. It is constitutional and strikes at the heart of the case. Donald Trump reads that again. If he hasn't already, somebody maybe should just read that paragraph to him. Maybe if they want more things on Truth Social.
There you go.
But that is a declaration of independence from not only the Federalist Society, but all these other mainstream conservatives and liberals saying, you know what? This is too much. And it should be read, frankly, not the entire brief, but just the excerpts by everybody who's thinking, gee, are we just being partisan when we attack the president? No, we've got reputable, longstanding, historically well-founded conservative and liberal views saying to him that you cannot do this. Unconstitutional, Mr. President. Can't be making him happy.
Jim Santel is our guest. He's host of Amicus, a law review Saturdays across the network from 9 to 11 a.m. And we're talking about this rift now between President Trump and Leonard Leo and the Federalist Society. And when this happened, Leonard Leo must have been going, what? What? Because, again, correct me if I'm wrong, Jim, but the Federalist Society has been a pipeline for Republican presidents, essentially to appoint judges for decades.
Absolutely. And frankly, some of the criticism from the left has been just that maybe this organization has too much influence on conservative or Republican presidents. And why should they basically give the president, even while they're campaigning for office? Here's the list of appeals court judges, state Supreme Court judges who might, in fact, be good on your Supreme Court. And the question was not so much should we do this, but just who among these people should, in fact, be selected. There was almost this, the pipeline could not be a better description for it, Jane. That's the way that this has worked. The notion, once again, that pipeline is presumably now cracked, to continue the analogy here, and that the president is now going someplace else to find others? What is that group going to look like?
That's a really good question.
That's the thing I just thought about while you were talking about, Jim, is like the Federalist Society has enough problems as it is when it comes to upholding democracy and their beliefs, how you do such a thing. Where is he going to go next? I mean, right. Is he just going to go to like the internet.
Chuckster School of Law.
Yeah.
And tiling.
I've been talking to Alex Jones, and he has some great ideas on Supreme Court justices.
The other thing that I've seen, though, Jim, and the Bulwark had a big article about this, is that Trump's criticism now of the Supreme Court justices he appointed is giving pause to some judges who might have been considering retirement. And now even conservative judges are going, I don't know that I want to leave because I don't trust who he's going to replace me with.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And again, for what it's worth, the great article made reference to, it's a wonderful article. Everybody should read it. It's not that long. It's accessible and does make that very important point. You've got conservative justices who might have been waiting to see whether Kamala Harris or Donald Trump becomes our next president so that, again, a conservative mainstream president could perhaps appoint a successor. I can go into retirement knowing that my seat at least will be followed by somebody else who kind of follows my same principles. No more. They're saying that those kinds of folks, if they are in fact appointed, again, federal judges, as we know, for life. Yes, they've got to be confirmed by the Senate, but they're there for life. You appoint some 45-year-olds, and they will be there for 40 years, yep. right? Yep. And so they're looking at that and saying, is this the America that I signed on for? Again, as conservatives, liberals, it doesn't matter, right? These fundamental principles are so important. And so it may well be that Donald Trump, this is one of the great legacies that any president provides, right? Is you just mentioned about the Supreme Court, but also judges in the appellate courts, the district courts, where the most of the law in America is made. He may not have all of that, those great numbers of vacancies that he anticipated.
Yeah.
And you may get conservatives and certainly liberals and some people in between who are just going to hang around for another 44 months or so and say, gee, we'll see what happens next. It's a very good point.
One of the big claims we get from people who disagree with us here is that they're accusing them of being activist liberal judges. And I always have to go back and say, you're talking about people who have been appointed by five different presidents over the past 40 years. Right. And their only interest, their fiduciary responsibility in their job is to uphold the Constitution of the United States and make sure the laws reflect that therein. And it's just surprising to me that anyone who dares in any way, shape or form on the bench look at it from that point of view is automatically an activist judge. Where I would contend, maybe acting in a way that Trump wants you to, as far as the law, that makes you the activist judge because you're going against everyone.
The Constitution.
Yeah.
Right. You're making decisions then not only contrary to history and precedent, but frankly, Jane, as you just indicated, and Greg also, it's you look at the language of the Constitution and you say, how can you square that? And that is, again, the virtue of appointed judges and justices for life is that they are freed up to be true. And some of them, we know some of those judges out there, they go in different directions that may not be consistent. But most of them come to work in the morning and they say, I've got this great responsibility. I don't have to run for office.
Right.
I don't have to. I can be criticized in the media by civic media and Jim Santel and other people. But you know, I got to do what's right. And you think ultimately about your legacy, not only your judicial legacy, but your lifetime legacy, right? We think about John Roberts all the time. How often do we have this discussion, my friends? What does John Roberts think when he gives the president presidential immunity? Is he rethinking some of that? That same Bulwark article kind of suggests that as well, right? That maybe, just maybe, the Supreme Court's having some second thoughts about what it did 11 months ago, too, because they're freed up to do what's right. They should be anyway.
Yeah, they should be. We're going to continue our conversation with James. It's Jay Santel. From Amicus, a law review. Stay with us. We'll be right back on the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin as a fish fry on a Friday night, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
It's time for Civic Media's Scotty Summer Text to Win contest right here on this local Civic Media radio station. We want to hook you up with $100 cash, Milwaukee Brewers club level tickets, and the chance to win a summer getaway to the Wisconsin Dells. Connecting audiences, powering brands. This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Good morning and welcome. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Sweet Cal B on the board. Coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine, where you can join us. Call or text. The number is the same. 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Jim Santel, host of Amicus, a law review Saturdays across the network from 9 to 11, is here to talk all things legal. And Jim, I wanted to touch on this just a little bit. A GOP bill will make it easier to appeal complaints rejected by the Wisconsin Elections Commission. So a lawsuit got thrown out by the Wisconsin Supreme Court in February, a challenge to a mobile voting van that was used in 2022. Now Republicans have come up with a bill that would make it possible for anyone to appeal decisions rejecting an election complaint.
And they're doing it based upon this notion that standing is the issue. We've talked about this before. In order to go into court, you've got to say that I've been damaged in some way. There's something significant happened to me, typically money, but it can also be employment, other things. That is a fundamental notion for 200 years in America. The reason why the Supreme Court threw out that a voting case involving the van was that not so much on the merits, but it was that this particular plaintiff hasn't shown that how it was that this van and the votes that it was encouraging, those kinds of polling, gosh, there's an American concept, right?
Right.
How does that damage you in particular? Identify that for me. And again, the Supreme Court said, we don't see it. So standing is the basis upon which the Supreme Court said, we're not going to let this go forward. By doing what, again, the governor is never going to sign this legislation, of course, but by doing this, they're trying basically to alter, if you will, the very ways in which our courts across the board apply the law. And at the risk of sounding too hyperbolic here, this is sort of like saying, we're going to legislate so that you can no longer raise equal protection. We don't like that idea anymore. So let's put that in some legislation. Oh, might be due process, all those kinds of things. It goes beyond just defining a particular civil or even criminal lawsuit. It goes to the core of who we are as Americans, that when you go into court, whether it's Calvin or me or anyone who's listening right now, I've got to be able to tell the judge, this is how I have been harmed. Mm-hmm. Again, I recognize this is a wonky level of sophistication that many people, regrettably, in Madison will never, ever appreciate. But also be aware of the fact that by doing this, it goes in the opposite direction, too. You get rid of standing with respect to voting issues. And it also means that if I don't like something, even if I, again, Jim Santel, Calvin, others don't like something, I may not be harmed by it, but now I can go do it and I can challenge things related to the takedown of the box or other things like that. It works in all directions. And against this knee-jerk reaction to an appropriate Supreme Court decision, it won't get, if it does get passed, the governor will not sign it. But it's another indication of what are we doing? You've talked so much about, again, the budget on this show and things they should be focusing on. Why are we doing this? And it really is contrary to the rule of law. It's contrary to this thing. Again, I always bring props, don't I? to the Constitution, right? Fifth Amendment, 14th Amendment, it's right there. It says due process. It talks about equal protection. It is implicit that standing is there, too. You got to show some damage. And they don't get it, or they don't care about it,
well,
probably more
to
likely.
Me, Jim, this is yet another example of when Republicans lose in a court of law, or if they lose in the legislature, right. Mm-hmm. They find a way to go around it. Yeah. It's sure, like, all sure. Right, this we didn't get the results we wanted this way, so now we're just going to go around it and do it this way instead so we can ultimately get what we want.
And right. And First and foremost, I think that's it. And beyond that, of course, they know that's not going to pass, or neither is get beyond the governor. But the real reason is so that he can send messages to Wisconsinites, perhaps Americans, that, again, we are still very much opposed to what happened in Racine. And look at how we are responding to this.
Right.
We're responding to it based upon a baseless theory, not going anywhere. It's with, forgive me for being so very direct. But this is just plain stupid, and it needs to be understood that way. But their position, of course, is we can issue the press release. Look at this legislation we're passing.
We're so tough.
We're protecting you, protecting voting rights. You're doing none of that. You're desecrating the very process that you're hoping otherwise to promote through voting. It's ridiculous.
And there's two thoughts I have with that. First of all, they love nothing more than when they try to pass through a piece of bunk legislation, it gets vetoed. And then they get to say, well, see, the governor wouldn't let it happen. He doesn't care about your safety, your security, or the elections. And also, as we've discussed just yesterday and far many times before that, is the fact that this is not important. This is not child care. This is not health care. This is not education. This is not taxes. This is not spending. This is about renewing a grudge you had because you lost an election and you're a bunch of petulant babies who just don't want to not get your way.
Well, and I also think it is part of continuing to feed this narrative that the Republicans love, that there is so much voter fraud. Right, there is no evidence. There has never been any evidence of widespread voter fraud. No matter how much Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, says he knows intuitively, they know intuitively, he says, there's all this voter fraud happening. There's no evidence of that.
There is not. There hasn't been. We know that in the 2020 election. It continues to be out there. This, again, is a way of keeping that issue in mind.
Yes.
Even as in Wisconsin, we go ahead to our next Supreme Court election next year as well. It keeps it fresh.
Yep.
And again, beyond that, you know what? If you really do find that person at some point who's been affected by the fact that there's a van that was promoting the franchise in America, happened to be in Racine, find that person. Bring that lawsuit and bring it in and say, you know what? Voter fraud happened here. And I was affected by it. That's your remedy. That's your remedy, if at all. Those people aren't out there, of course, but that's the genuine response that Americans on all sides should have to
this. It's called standing. Jim Santel, listen to his show, Amicus, a Law Review, Saturdays 9 to 11 across the network. It is fantastic. Thank you so much, my friend. We'll see you next week.
Always a pleasure, Jane and Greg. Take care.
We have news coming up next. Keep it right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM. W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. President Trump says he's disappointed as Elon Musk publicly criticizes his spending bill. They've traded barbs online, Trump insisting.
Elon knew the inner workings of this bill better than almost anybody sitting here. Better than you people. He knew everything about it. He had no problem with it. All of a sudden, he had a problem.
CBS's Nancy Cordes.
This bill was never shown to me even once, Musk spat back as he rebutted his former boss in real time with a flurry of posts on his social media site, X. Bankrupting America is not okay, he wrote. Kill the bill.
It goes to very special people. And
the very public falling out comes just 6 days after Trump handed Musk a key to the White House and 4 months after the two declared their bond unbreakable.
The Boulder firebombing suspect appears in state court. No plea entered, just the setting of a preliminary.